and we wanted it to serve as a model, as an example of working together.
A new agreement between the North Slope Borough and Shell Oil. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 28th of October. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Alaska Supreme Court agrees to hear the Democrats' complaint against the Division of Elections.
And we are saying, here are the reasons we believe you should uphold the lower court's decision. Here is where we disagree with the state's argument.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
The North Slope Borough has announced an agreement with Shell Oil that could ease the way for Arctic oil development. The plan calls for a long-term scientific research agreement between the two entities. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
North Slope Borough Mayor Edward Itta made the announcement this morning at North Slope offices in Anchorage. The agreement allows North Slope communities to have input on what to research and to have an independent review of studies of exploration and development plans produced by the oil industry. Itta said the agreement has been under negotiation for over a year.
We wanted it done right, and we wanted it to answer the questions of the needs and priorities of both Shell and the North Slope Borough. And we wanted it to serve as a model, as an example of working together. I think Pete and I agree that we need to collaborate wherever we can.
Shell Vice President Pete Slaby joined Itta in making the announcement.
We do believe it's an important step forward. We've been working with the North Slope Borough, with Mayor Itta, for a number of years. And, you know, I'm here to say very humbly, we've learned a lot as well. So we've had some false starts and some things that you wish you could call that play over again. But I think we're on a much better keel.
Slaby said Shell has made more than 350 visits into North Slope communities to hear the concerns of villagers. Slaby said Itta has a huge balancing act in protecting the subsistence needs of the villages and in providing for economic growth and opportunities. Borough Mayor Itta says the arrangement allows a better understanding of each other's priorities. He says if there is to be a long-term industry presence in Arctic waters, this is the right way to do it, carefully, one step at a time.
Because we do not have enough data. And to illustrate the point, the U.S. Geological Survey now is just doing what they call a gap analysis. What's missing out there? And so we're going to be working hand in hand with what's being developed, because this is all new.
The agreement creates an investigative scientific program to be funded by Shell for the next 5 years. The program will be built and managed by the North Slope Borough through an advisory committee to be composed of representatives of 6 North Slope villages and scientists from Shell, the borough, and elsewhere. Traditional knowledge is to be incorporated into the data. Shell is spending $2 million on the program through the end of 2011. The amount of funding is expected to increase after that, depending on which studies are prioritized. Itta says there is no outline yet as to exactly what type of scientific studies will be tackled by the program.
There are a whole number of issues, so I can't say what specifically the projects will be, but be assured it will be things related to the ocean in both the Chukchi and the Beaufort.
The agreement provides for third parties to be involved in coming years to expand the scope of the studies and to increase funding. To questions about the cumulative impacts of oil development in the Arctic, Slaby responded that the amount of development in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas will be a bit different with respect to the number of developers there. Quote, it will not be another Gulf of Mexico, he said.
Developing this already pretty broad baseline data that we've got up there. But, you know, if we are blessed at a certain point with the development. We will need more and more science. It will be one of the more or most impressive projects that we will see in North America. So building on our science is absolutely the appropriate thing to do. And
Shell is poised to begin exploratory drilling next year. It has said that there's more scientific data gathered on the Beaufort Sea than the Chukchi. It has said permitting agencies such as the state of Alaska need to be more involved, and it seems to fall to the borough and Shell to work things out as the industry moves forward. It has said the borough only got Shell's application for a drill permit 2 weeks ago and that the borough is still reviewing it. But it has said there's a world of difference between what was proposed in 2006 and today. He said, quote, "I've always tried to protect our way of life through science." I'm Ellen Lockyer.
The state received approximately $9.5 million in bonus bids for its competitive oil and gas lease sales in the Beaufort Sea and North Slope on Wednesday. North Slope bids on 129 tracts brought in close to $9 million. 21 Beaufort Sea tracts brought in more than $702,000. The North Slope sale was dominated by Great Bear Petroleum, a new player in Alaska. The company won all of the 105 tracts it bid on. Kevin Banks, director of the Division of Oil and Gas, said he's pleased there's continued industry interest in the exploration potential of the North Slope. The Alaska Democratic Party is taking its fight with the State Division of Elections to the Alaska Supreme Court. The Democrats filed suit this week against the State and Elections Division Director Gail Fanoumiai for allowing lists of write-in candidates to be viewed on request at early voting polling places. The Republican Party of Alaska joined the suit with the Democrats, and the Lisa Murkowski campaign joined the suit on the side of the state. A lower court ruled the lists at polling places was a violation of the state's election laws. The state then appealed the matter to the Supreme Court. The state's highest court decided late yesterday to stay a superior court decision that would have blocked the lists from being available to voters wanting assistance on a write-in vote. The Supreme Court gave the plaintiffs until today to file a response. The Democrats filed for a review of the superior court decision late this afternoon. Patty Higgins is chair of the Alaska Democratic Party. She says the party will continue to fight against having the lists at polling places.
The court said, tell us why we should or shouldn't uphold the lower court's decision. And we are saying, here are the reasons we believe you should uphold the lower court's decision. Here is where we disagree with the state's argument.
Plaintiffs in the case say the lists give write-in candidate Lisa Murkowski an unfair advantage. The state has filed for expedited review of the case and has asked the Supreme Court justices to hear the case before the close of business on Friday. Alaska election officials mailed more than 30,000 absentee ballots to voters for next week's election. This surpasses the roughly 26,000 absentee ballots mailed for the 2006 general election. The State Division of Elections also reports faxing about 860 ballots. The deadline to receive application by fax is Monday. Absentee ballots could play a major role in the hotly contested U.S. Senate race. They did in the August GOP primary, which was too close to call on election night. After the first big batch of absentee ballots was counted a week later, Senator Lisa Murkowski conceded the race to Joe Miller. Murkowski is running in the general election as a write-in candidate. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, intensive training for village law enforcement officers.
We're all family here. I mean, it feels like family. We're all brothers in law, I guess.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sean Parnell and Ethan Berkowitz want to be your next governor. Do you know who you'll vote for? Hear what the candidates have to say on Debate for the State 2010. On Thursday, October 28th at 8 p.m., Alaska Public Broadcasting brings you a live debate with candidates for Alaska governor. You can submit questions now. Email to questions@debateforthestate.org. Then watch or listen to your local public television or radio station, October 28th at 8 p.m.
Yesterday's Debate for the State series kicked off on Alaska public broadcasting stations with the candidates for U.S. House. The hour-long debate saw some agreement between Republican Congressman Don Young and Democratic State Representative Harry Crawford, but also plenty of areas where their positions couldn't have been more different. KCAW's Ed Ronco has this recap.
Congressman Don Young and State Representative Harry Crawford found some common ground during last night's debate in Anchorage. For example, both agreed that the war in Afghanistan is unwinnable and that there should be an extra tax during times of conflict to help fund the military, and that the draft should be reinstated, although Young says he doesn't think such an idea would be approved by Congress. Closer to home, the two agreed that subsistence priorities should not be granted to Alaska Natives who live in urban areas, and that location, not income, should determine who has subsistence rights. Here's Crawford.
I believe that subsistence priority ought to be for the people that live in an area and have no other way of subsisting.
Both also agreed on the merits of the federal government's 8A program, which allows Alaska Native corporations to get preference on no-bid government contracts. The program has come under fire recently from U.S. Senator Claire McCaskill, a Missouri Democrat. Crawford says there are improvements that can be made to the program, such as increasing transparency in the process. He says he hopes to sit down with McCaskill and, quote, get her to see the light and the efficacy of the program. But Young says that hasn't worked.
Well, we have one Democrat senator who tried to talk to her and she wouldn't listen. We have one Republican senator and she wouldn't listen.
Young says 15,000 Alaska Natives are working under what he calls a good program.
It is an example where if they're successful, get rid of it. And I think this is a bad example of the Senate overstepping their bounds. And I can guarantee you when I'm reelected, it's not going to go anywhere in the House.
As to whether there's corruption, Young says any program that large will have corruption and that it's important to catch it and punish those responsible, but not to do away with the whole program. Crawford says Native Corporation CEOs have heard the criticism and are working to make it better. The two differed more strongly on the future of Social Security. Young favors raising the age for people to access benefits from 65 to 70 over a period of time. Young says benefits for those already in the system should be guaranteed, but that younger people should have the ability to invest in private accounts, which he calls a safety net.
30% of the nation's wealth melted away in 2008. That's no safety net.
That's Crawford. He says Social Security is a promise that needs to be kept and that there are other ways to make sure the system is financially stable.
One of the things that you could allow is for the cap at $106,000 to rise naturally. That is going to make it balance for many years to come.
Because at the moment, people who make over $106,000
don't have to pay
Social Security taxes on the amount above $106,000.
Right.
So you would favor raising that?
Absolutely.
Congressional earmarks, or the process of setting money aside for specific projects, also came up during the debate. Young is a vocal defender of the practice, which often puts him at odds with Republican Party leadership. Like Young, Crawford says earmarks are necessary for a growing state like Alaska, but that he'd work to minimize their use. Both men were asked about what could arguably be Alaska's most famous earmark, the so-called Bridges to Nowhere in Ketchikan and Anchorage. Young said pushing for those projects was not a mistake.
There is no such thing as a bridge to nowhere. There is a bridge that goes everywhere. And this should be done and will be done. The one in Ketchikan has to be done someday, I hope sooner. The one here in Anchorage has to be done. We're growing and getting more crowded all the time. And I put it out in the open. It was transparent. They were voted four times for that bridge.
Crawford says the bridges can be done better and cheaper than originally planned in 2005. And he said it looked bad to ask for the money at a time when another part of the country was suffering in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina.
We were letting those folks languish down there. They were in a terrible, terrible fix. And, you know, it looked like excess that we were spending money on very expensive bridges here.
Crawford was born and raised in Shreveport, Louisiana, and has been a state representative for 10 years. Young has represented Alaska in the U.S. House since 1973. This is Ed Ronco reporting.
The three front-running candidates in Alaska's contentious U.S. Senate race also answered questions during last night's debate. Democrat Scott McAdams and Republicans Joe Miller and Lisa Murkowski covered well-worn campaign issues like natural resource development and health care, but as KUAC's Dan Bross reports, also provided perspectives on issues that haven't received as much press.
There were no real shockers from the candidates, but their takes on the world were fleshed out a little better by a diverse assortment of questions, like when they were asked about whether creationism should be taught in schools. Scott McAdams and Lisa Murkowski said no, but Miller left room for God and evolution.
Anybody sitting here that doesn't think they're created, think again. We all are. Clearly, there are different ideas about origins. Science needs to be behind it, but there's good science on both sides of it. And I do believe that children should be permitted to see both sides.
There were more than two sides to some of the issues during last night's debate, but oftentimes Murkowski and McAdams were more aligned than either was with Miller. During a round of questions about foreign policy, Miller said the U.S. needs to minimize its non-military endeavors in other countries, while Murkowski and McAdams showed more support for humanitarian efforts. On the war in Afghanistan, Murkowski said Congress should not be micromanaging the decisions of military leaders.
I think we need to listen to the guidance of those that we have put in charge. But for us to make that decision arbitrarily and say now's the time to pull out, I think is a mistake for us as a nation.
Scott McAdams was also willing to allow a little more time in Afghanistan, but added that he has a very high standard for committing the military to interventions.
A clear definition of what success looks like, because we can't afford in either human blood or in national treasury to continue to be engaged in nation building and endless war.
Joe Miller said the mission drift in Afghanistan from elimination of terrorism to nation building has handcuffed soldiers on the ground.
Where our men and women in uniform had to wait until they're shot at or killed before they can fire back. I mean, it's a ridiculous set of rules of engagement.
Miller also took the harder stance when it came to illegal immigration from Mexico, advocating for a fence between the two countries, while Murkowski and McAdams thought that wouldn't solve the problem. When the debate turned to finances and bank bailouts, Miller insisted no business is too big to fail.
It's a mistake. It's not based on the free enterprise system.
Murkowski, who voted for the bank bailout, says she grew to regret it because of how money paid back has been rerouted.
For other initiatives. That's not what this was all about. This was designed, you repay that, and it goes to reduce the deficit.
McAdams rounded out the dialogue by stressing the importance of Wall Street reform legislation, saying there wasn't much choice on the bailout.
You can either vote for this bill, or you can watch the Western world collapse.
The debate proceeded pretty cordially, except for one exchange between Miller and Murkowski over the future of Social Security. Murkowski started the skirmish by querying Miller about his proposed elimination of the program.
That's never come out of my mouth, Senator. That's yet another mischaracterization of what I've said.
It was reported
there's no
in
quote.
The Anchorage Daily News.
Well, that's right.
We
it was reported in the ADN, which is basically your arm piece in this entire campaign. That is not what I said. There's not a quote to that effect. I have said that we have got to go to a different system. People in my year group clearly have got to have the option of putting their money somewhere where that money is not going to be stolen from them from the government.
Senator Murkowski, 15 seconds. Anything you need to say to that?
I'm still waiting for the answer.
I just told you.
Next up.
I think we need a group hug.
That may be a good option given the tight nature of the race and the looming battle at the polls Tuesday. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com. And by Fire Island Wind, offering a fuel-free energy alternative to South Central Alaska natural gas. Learn more at fireislandwind.com.
The former district accounting supervisor at the Fairbanks Courthouse has pleaded guilty to embezzling $237,000 worth of bail money. The Fairbanks Daily Newsminer reported that 39-year-old Catherine Turner pleaded guilty to a single count of first-degree theft, a Class B felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison. A judge will decide the sentence at a hearing scheduled for February 25th. Turner worked at the courthouse for 11 years until the area court administrator discovered accounting irregularities last July. Peace officers from small communities all across Alaska were in Bethel for an intense 2 weeks of training. Village public and public safety officers often work alone. Leaders of the training say it will give them the skills they need to keep their villages and themselves safe. From member station KYUK in Bethel, Shane Iverson has more.
Good evening. BPSO Sartelli, how you doing?
So what do I care?
Well, I don't know. How do you care?
I don't know, sir.
You know, the owners called here and just asked if you'd just walk and go somewhere else. Would you like to come along with me?
Not really. Do I have to go?
James Sartelli is a village public safety officer from Chivac. He's currently in a standoff with a large man in thick protective padding. The man is role-playing a drunk that has overstayed a get-together. It's Sartelli's job to get him to leave.
Let me just come up here and actually just give you a hand to come with me, okay?
Sartelli has worked his way behind the red man, as he's affectionately called in his red pads. He grabs his elbow and pushes it up into the escort position and walks him out. VPSO coordinator Alvin Jimmy is observing.
The more practice they do, the more comfortable they get. Some of these VPSOs in their communities, at times they don't go to this level. So that's why I was saying in the beginning, it varies per community on how the people react.
Now, in the second round, the red man plays a much more aggressive lawbreaker. It's now the VPSO's job to take him into custody on an arrest warrant.
I don't want you! I cannot help you! I cannot help you at all!
After being attacked, the VPSO levels his padded baton at the attacker's leg, bringing him into submission within moments. Jimmy says most arrests are not like this, but some are, and he's happy to see his officers training for such an event.
When they're responding to calls, they need to be aware from being calm, it can go to extreme, and this is a time for them to train to get their level back up to speed.
The officers, most all of them are alone in the village. There's no backup.
Mike Decreon is a retired sergeant. He helps coordinate trainings for village and tribal police officers.
So when they make an arrest, they have to be able to take care of themselves, and that's what we teach them here.
While VPSOs are receiving a refresher course, new VPOs are receiving their first ever law enforcement training. Decreon is also working with some brand new VPSO hires.
The reason they're here is they don't go to the academy until January. So they need training. They're all new hires. And so they come here and get a two-week kind of a basic thing so they understand law enforcement.
This training, 19 VPSOs graduated the two-week opener, as well as another 8 new VPSOs. Fred Lamont received his VPO training at Ute during a previous training a few months ago.
Before, I was trying to decide, okay, is this an arrest or what's going on here? And now it's, okay, I know exactly what I need to do. You do it.
Lamont was a brand new VPO when he got his first training. Since then, he's risen to become a VPSO, which requires additional training. He says these local classes are helpful.
We're all family here. I mean, it feels like family. We're all brothers in law, I guess.
I'm Shane Iverson.
An international group of scientists and traditional native hunters have received a special conservation award for work done in tracking whales in the Arctic region and the Bering Sea. KDLG's Adam Kane has the story.
An international project consisting of tribal, regional, state, and federal agencies has been honored with a partnership conservation award from the Department of the Interior for the work done in tagging and tracking bowhead whales in the Arctic region. The main goal of the project was for scientists to work with native whale hunters from Alaska and the Northwest Territories in Canada to attach satellite tracking transmitters onto bowhead whales to study movement and habitat use in the Bering, Chukchi, and Beaufort Seas, as well as across the Bering Strait and Russian waters. The Bowhead Whale Tracking Project was an international partnership between the Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission, the North Slope Bureau, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the Canadian Department of Fisheries and Oceans, the Greenland Institute of Natural Resources, as well as whaling captains from the Eklavik and the Tuktoyaktuk Hunters and Trappers Committees in Canada. Lori Quakenbush is the Arctic Marine Mammal Program Leader for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. She attributes much of the project's success to the knowledge and experience of the local whaling captains who helped attach transmitting tags at close range.
the people that were most involved and have the most experience with bowhead whales are the whalers themselves. And so we actually worked with the whalers to put the tags on. So we had people who are very familiar with approaching bowhead whales in boats, approaching them and tagging them with equipment that's similar to a harpoon that would be used for hunting.
Quakenbush confirms that since the project began in early 2006, more than 57 whales have been tagged. Some of the tags remained in place for longer than others, allowing a few individual whales to be tracked for more than a year. She said the partnership with the whaling community was important because scientists and local hunters were both interested in finding out more about the interaction between the large marine mammals and human developments.
The interest of the whaling community in knowing where bowhead whales go and when they're in certain places and how they might be interacting with oil and gas, especially concerns about seismic and drilling noise and how that changes bowhead behavior or migration paths, which is a concern to whalers if the whales are diverted around villages where whaling occurs, they would have less success.
The program was developed in 2005 and the first tags were attached in 2006. Since then, scientists have collected quite a bit of data and information about the whales, including location and diving depths, as well as time spent at specific depths, migration patterns and cycles, and interannual variabilities, or what whales do differently each year. Quakenbush says that after tracking whales for the past 4 years, scientists have uncovered some uncommon findings.
We had one whale go in between Banks Island and Victoria Island, which is sort of north of Canada on the eastern Beaufort Sea, go all the way through to a strait that was basically open towards Greenland, so pretty far north, and something that we haven't seen other tagged whales do.
Quakenbush says that that whale didn't make it through the full Northeast Passage over Canada, but was found to be approaching the range of Greenland bowhead whales that were previously considered to be from a different stock, implying the possibility that the two populations could be mixing. Previously, little was known about the winter activities of the bowhead whale population in the Bering Sea. Quakenbush notes that after tracking the whales for a few seasons, they have found that the whales generally tend to stay in the Bering Sea, however they do move more towards the Russian waters to the west. All of the collaborating entities received the U.S. Department of the Interior's Partner in Conservation Award for their work done in the bowhead whale tracking project. In Dillingham, I'm Adam Kane.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Ed Ronco in Sitka, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Adam Kane in Dillingham, and Shane Iverson in Bethel. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Condor Airlines, with connecting flights from Barrow, Bethel, Juneau, Kodiak, Nome, and Prudhoe Bay to Anchorage on Alaska Airlines, and continuing nonstop service to Frankfurt. Details at condor.com.
And by
the Doyon family of companies working together to build Alaska's future.
Sean Parnell and Ethan Berkowitz want to be your next governor. Do you know who you'll vote for? Hear what the candidates have to say on Debate for the State 2010. On Thursday, October 28th at 8 p.m., Alaska Public Broadcasting brings you a live debate with candidates for Alaska governor. You can submit questions now. Email to questions@debateforthestate.org. Then watch or listen to your local public television or radio station, October 28th at 8 p.m.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.